This week, the news was dominated by yet another Irish abortion controversy as it emerged that a woman had delivered a baby by caesarean section after requesting an abortion under the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act. In international news, James Foley, an American photojournalist, was beheaded by ISIS militants. Yesterday, here at home, we heard the sad news that the former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds had died at the age of 81 after a long illness. Now, to take a look back at these and other main stories of the week, I'm joined by Eoghan Reardon, Minister of State at the Department of Justice and Equality and Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, with special responsibility for equality, new communities and culture. What a title, what a bag of responsibilities. Also here, Brenda Power, columnist, probably folds over, columnist with the Irish Daily Mail and the Sunday Times. Dermot Ferreter is Professor of Modern Irish History at University College Dublin, and Cora Sherlock is Solicitor and Deputy Chairperson of the Pro-Life Campaign. Thank you all for coming in. Let's start with the death of Albert Reynolds. Dermot, a statesman was John Major's. One word summary.
It can be difficult in the immediate aftermath of the death of a politician to assess their historic significance. And I suppose understandably there's a degree of reverence, and perhaps sometimes it can be a bit gushing and some difficulties can be overlooked. There is an onus on the historian to try and be more detached, I think.
You've had 20 years now since he left office.
Well, yeah, and some of the assessments that have been made since have, of course, acknowledged the crucial role he played in the peace process. Others have suggested that he cannot be considered a great Taoiseach because his tenure was so brief and because perhaps his range wasn't that wide. So you're going to get conflicting assessments, and we don't have access to state papers at this stage for the time that he was in government. But I think the tribute that was paid to him by John Major was deserved in the context of the peace process. What he did, he showed great leadership, he took risks, he built up a very important relationship with Major, which historically for Taoiseach has been very difficult. Anglo-Irish relations, building up relationship with a British Prime Minister has been difficult, particularly if you're trying to get something concrete done. So I think that was a well-deserved tribute. And you've got to look, I suppose, at what he did in 1992 to 1994, what that meant, taking the long view, the historical view. It was quite clear in the 1920s that the IRA was not going to accept the legitimacy of the state. De Valera, when he came in 1932, attempted to appease the Republican movement, but very shortly afterwards was done dealing with them. The IRA was declared an illegal organisation. And he announced then that the policy of patience is over. And what you had after that, right up to the early 1990s, was a refusal by this state to deal with the IRA. So what Reynolds was doing in 1992, 93, 94 was very, very significant historically, and he pushed it over the line. And that took courage, and it took a particular type of character, I think, to be able to do that. The language he used was fascinating. We're very dependent on Sean Dignan as a source for his time in office because of the book he wrote. And he describes how he said he was going to reel in the IRA, box them in, and going to cut off their lines of retreat, which is a very interesting choice of language. And that was a response to him being accused of being too green and too pro-Sinn Féin. So he played a very clever game, and he pulled it off. And he's going to be remembered for that. But taking the bigger picture, he was not particularly successful as Taoiseach. He was not good at running coalition governments. There was a very harsh assessment made of him in 1994 by Michael McDowell, who said he was in effect a caretaker Taoiseach who had been thrown up by the opposition to Charles Haughey, that he didn't deliver on the promises of open government, accountable government, a different type of government. And he was also mentioned in the Matin report, which was a terrible indictment of a political culture that was rotten and built up over decades. And he was part of that. He was part of that class of 77 who didn't exactly cover themselves in glory. That's not taking away from his place in the history books as a result of the peace process. But there is a bigger picture there that emerged in time.
Yeah, I mean, as in any political career, there are shortcomings and there are going to be divisive issues and reasons to question somebody's legacy. But I do think what you said there, Dermot, about his character being crucial to his success in the North is probably one of the reasons why he will actually be remembered. You know, it has been, much has been made of the fact that he approached particularly the Northern conflict, to the surprise apparently of family and friends who didn't know that it preoccupied him to any great extent before he became Taoiseach, that he approached it with a businessman's sensibilities. I'd say even with a salesman's sensibilities. You know, when you pick up the phone to a cold caller and they say, would you like half-price broadband? Would you like to save money on your insurance? Of course you're going to say, well, yes, I would. That sounds good. And the next thing they do is say, well, try it for a while. And what Albert did was he said, would you like peace? He famously said, who's afraid of peace? Try it for a while. try it for a while, a ceasefire. Let's tweak the politics later. Let's just give people a taste of what it's like to live without fear, to be able to send your children out and know they'll come home safe, and try it for a while. And I think that that was crucial to securing the peace, the ceasefire at the time, but also something that only somebody who thought the way Albert did, and he wasn't a wrap the green flag round me sort of Fianna Fáiler. In fact, his links would have been closer to Fine Gael, so he didn't have that baggage. He approached it, he was selling a product, and he sold it.
He listened very carefully as well to his domestic advisors, his wife Kathleen and his seven children, five of whom were daughters. Now, I think you recall a particular issue which arose around the issue of children's allowance and whether it should be taxed or means tested.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I think it's forgotten that it was his first budget, I think, as Minister for Finance in the late 80s, that Albert introduced means testing of children's allowance. And I was sent out, I was working for the Sunday Press at the time, and I was sent out to interview the finance minister's wife, which doesn't happen very often these days, but that was a human interest story. And Kathleen was always very welcoming. And I brought this up because it was beginning to cause a controversy, not as big a one as you would have thought now, but it was beginning to cause a bit of a stir. And she said, well, actually, that was my idea. And she said she had been in Brown Thomas shortly beforehand, and she'd met Norma Smurfit trying on a pair of very expensive shoes, which would have been the same price as the average industrial wage at the time, about £300. And Kathleen said to Norma, you're treating yourself, Norma. And Norma said, no, actually, the taxpayer is treating me, basically. I save my children's allowance every year and I buy one decent pair of shoes. And Kathleen went home to Albert and said, this doesn't strike me as right. And Albert duly said, I agree with you, Kathleen. And he introduced a cap on, or at least a means testing for children's allowance. But I think possibly in part due to my intervention, after it appeared in the paper that Kathleen had been behind this provision, it died a death.
I think there was a head of steam, as you suggested, building up on the back benches against this as well.
The acknowledgement that it was Kathleen's idea didn't help.
In fairness to Norma Smurfit, I suspect she gave a multiple of that amount to various good causes that she has been supportive of down through the years. Eoghan Reardon, your party, because it fell out with Albert Reynolds over issues that were really important at the time, but people would really struggle to explain at this stage, effectively locked itself out of government for 15 years once its 2.5 year stint, along with Fine Gael and the DL as it was then, came to an end and Fianna Fáil were left back. Talking to colleagues, and I know you were probably a young political activist at that time while these events were going on, was there ever any sense of regret? God, we should have kept that show on the road.
I would have been a student at that stage, just looking on. I think the interesting thing about Albert Reynolds is that he came to politics quite late. He would have been in his late 40s when he was first elected in the 1970s. And I think that that probably helped him in many ways in the way that he dealt with problems and in other ways hindered him. I mean, what made him successful in Northern Ireland was his bluntness and his direct approach, which was probably needed at that point in time because it had dragged on quite a bit from the for quite a number of years up until his time being elected as Taoiseach, was also probably part of the reason why he was central to the two governments falling as well. So I think when you think about the reasons as to why that government fell with Albert Reynolds as Taoiseach, if that controversy had happened maybe in the early stages of that government, it may have been able to overcome it, but I think things had been coming to a head previous to that. I think his legacy, I think at this immediate stage, just after his passing, it's important to focus on the best of a man. And when you look at the country as it is now versus where we were 20 years ago and the horrors that were happening daily, weekly in Northern Ireland and in Britain, as a result of the violence that was going on, it needed somebody with a direct approach to step into that space at that time and to get heads together. And people instinctively trusted him. And people from very different backgrounds instinctively trusted him. And he got the business done. And very few people who have a political legacy can point to a huge event in Irish history, and he did that.
Cora Sherlock, Diarmaid was saying, look, he was in it for a very short time, and the question arises, is it possible for someone to achieve greatness holding office as Taoiseach for just 2.5 years, less than 3 years in his case?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, I think one of the things that will stand out about Albert Reynolds when we come to look back at it is his business background and the fact that he was a deal maker. He took the risks that maybe other people wouldn't have taken, and maybe politicians at the moment could learn a lesson from that. It's worth remembering as well that when he became Minister for Post and Telegraph, there was a 2-year waiting list for telephones in this country. And I think he introduced something like, in the year after, there was something like 60,000 telephones. That's the kind of country he entered politics in. So we have a lot to thank him for.
Right. The other big story of the week, of course, was how abortion in this country made national and international headlines once more as it emerged that a young woman had a baby delivered by cesarean section, this after she had requested an abortion under the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act. Brenda Power, we still don't have the full facts, but from what we've been able to piece together from reading various reports, and we'll get the full story maybe in late September from the HSE, what do you make of it?
I think these dilemmas are going to keep arising. This one, as far as I can make out, and I've read as much as I can about it, I'm not entirely clear at what point a request on the basis of suicidal intention was formally made. And I know that the issue has arisen now as to who has a duty when there is even an intimation that this might be the way the woman is thinking of drawing that situation to sort of official attention. Personally, I think, like a lot of people, I'm conflicted about this whole area, but I think we're going to have to repeal the Eighth Amendment. And my own genuine belief is that up to 10 to 12 weeks, abortion should be a matter for a woman and her doctor. And that 8 weeks, when this woman requested an abortion in the circumstances where she had been raped, apparently a weapon of war in the country she had fled, that should have been granted.
But then in a situation where she was here and 22 weeks.
You see, when you get to the stage of viability, which is increasingly early now, apparently 19, even maybe 18 weeks in some circumstances, babies can survive, or fetuses or products of conception, whatever way you want to term them. By that stage, there clearly are conflicting rights. And in the hierarchy of rights in our constitution, the right to life supersedes all others. So, and it's very difficult to, in the circumstances, as far as I can make out, listening to the different commentators talking about this, they're drawing a distinction between the termination, which she got, which is what she would have got had she gone to the UK at that stage, because I think the cut-off period is, a point is then there 28 weeks, and an abortion. The only distinction I can see in between what happened and what she sought was that in an abortion, the baby would have been left to die. I don't think that is an advance for anybody's human rights.
Cora Sherlock, this case at least seems to have been dealt with in large measure using the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act passed just over a year ago. And it could be argued that, OK, there are drawbacks with what happened with the child being delivered prematurely, but at least that child is alive today, perhaps as a result of that legislation being passed, which you opposed.
Well, I think what you say is, talking about the act that was passed last year, this very tragic case has highlighted the very deep-seated flaws in that act, and I think that it's very important that act is repealed. What we've seen in the last week in particular, and since this case broke, is the mask slipping on the pro-choice community in Ireland for pro-abortion operatives who are very experienced. They have been, a little bit less likely to slip, but we certainly saw it at the pro-choice march in Dublin when there was aggressive and abusive speeches from pro-choice advocates, ignoring the very tragic case of two human beings at the heart of this. We need quiet and calm at the moment. And can I just say that's really why there is a vigil being organised this evening outside the Dáil at 7:30 p.m. to show solidarity and concern for the mother and baby.
What do you say to Brenda Power's suggestion that ultimately the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, Article 43.3, should be repealed?
Well, what I would say to that is that the onus is on those people who want to repeal the Eighth Amendment to show why we should remove all legal protection from unborn babies in this country. And let's remember that this is not the law that was passed last year wasn't passed for any medical reason. There's no medical evidence. It was purely to give the Labour Party something to go back. I mean, Aon is on record as saying that they wanted to be able to go back and say at the end of this government, at least we did that. The country is really sick and tired of the Labour Party, the obscene clamour for abortion while a baby clings to life at the moment. And it's time we restored evidence-based medicine to women and babies in this country. And that means repealing last year's act.
Aon or Éireann?
I'm fascinated to hear terms such as aggressive and abusive coming from the pro-choice side. I wasn't at
pro-life side, no.
The accusations that the pro-choice march was aggressive and abusive. I think both sides could claim that. Many people would suggest that if there's aggressive and abusive behaviour coming from one side, I think both sides, and there's extreme on both sides that have been involved in aggressive and abusive behaviour. In terms of statements like clamour for abortion, from any particular political party, let's be just quite clear, and I'm not talking about this particular case, and I won't. Abortion is an Irish reality. And there's women listening to this programme today who have had abortions, who have got the 4,000 a year, go to England and have terminations for various different reasons. Abortion is always a tragedy. In my own personal view, abortion should be extremely rare, but should be accessible in very limited and rare circumstances. Now, currently, it is not permissible under Irish law to have abortion in cases of rape, in cases of incest, in cases of fetal abnormality, or in cases when the health of a woman is at risk, as distinct from her life being at risk.
Could you provide for all those circumstances and still have it very rarely accessible?
Well, currently the situation is, I mean, we spent 20 years as a party campaigning for the X case to be legislated for. And we made our position quite clear before the last general election that that is what we wanted to achieve. Now, we achieved that after 20 years. There's no intention in the lifetime of this government to revisit the Eighth Amendment. I think the next government and every political party should stake their position on this very clear before the next general election, so people understand plainly what they feel should happen in this case. I think most people listen to this programme, Sean, if they're honest with themselves, if their teenage daughter was raped and pregnant, they know that what decision they would most likely make. And we cannot depend
Sean,
on...
I'd like to come in.
I actually didn't.
Yeah, but I mean, Eoin, you have spoken at length for some time now. There are really important
Just bear with
points.
Him a moment and I'll let you back in. But I want to have Jim's priorities as well.
If I can. I think most people listening to this programme, if they're honest with themselves, if their teenage daughter was raped and pregnant, they know what decision they would most likely make. And we can't be depending on England to solve our problems forever.
Jim Fraser.
A question that arises for me, is it acceptable in this country that a rape victim is forced to carry their pregnancy against their will? If it is acceptable, what does that say about the status of women in this country? If it's not acceptable, who is going to do something about it and how? What's also interesting is that if you go back to the fallout from the Eighth Amendment, which has been nothing but a disaster, in 1992, Niall McCarthy in the Supreme Court said that the failure to legislate for that amendment was inexcusable. And he posed the questions, what are rape victims to do? What are the parents of underage pregnant girls to do? What's the medical profession to do? Now, can we say that the legislation last year, that the bill has adequately answered those questions? I don't know if we can. And it just serves to illustrate that that protection of pregnancy in life bill is actually irrelevant to the vast majority of women who are pregnant and who want abortions, because it's so ridiculously restrictive. But this is also about class. Because those who have the means to travel or those who have the means to deal with this themselves will continue to do that, will continue to make that journey. But those who don't are left very, very vulnerable. And that seems to be one of the core messages. Can I just finish by saying one of the things that has changed, I think, is that in the past this was often spoken about in abstract terms, theological arguments, legal arguments. What we are getting now is the power of the individual story of personal testimony.
Yeah, I really need to make
it's
a few points here.
Real.
Can I just say that there are people listening to this programme who are themselves conceived through rape and incest, and it's very offensive of Eoin to be talking about how they should be airbrushed out of the situation. They have human rights and they have a right to exist and to be looked after. And let's not forget as well that we've heard Labour Party members bragging this week about how they have been, and Eoin has done it again, about they've been consistently campaigning for the right to end human life. So that's not what the majority of people in this country want. And also, Eoin, I have to take issue with
language.
Can I just say that, you know, Eoin here talks about honesty and he wants honesty in the debate. I find that a little bit hypocritical when he's already on record as saying that there are certain things that he won't say on the radio. We found out last year from a report in the Sunday Independent where he wanted the legislation brought through last year as a starting point. He said, once we get the principle passed, then we'll get it over the line. We know what the legislation was about. It was about giving the Labour Party something to up them in the polls. You know what, Eoin? Maybe if the Labour Party looked after the economy a bit more rather than trying to end human lives when there is no benefit to women, no proven benefit anywhere in the world, that abortion benefits...
It's
interesting. Telling that you don't have anything to come back.
I mean,
with.
You know, what we have to focus on here is what is lawful and what is legal, and what we are, you know, a particular case that we're going to get the HSE to look at in terms of the practicalities around the debate and the constitutionality of where we stand. It isn't acceptable, in my view, the current standpoint, and I think the next government is going to have to face up to that. But I hope in the future we'll have a debate which has less slogans and accusations hanging around it,
and
more
honesty.
Real
and
conversation
honesty,
about
Aeon.
The real situations that real women are finding.
You'll all be welcome back at a future date.
Presented on the radio, Aeon. That's what I'll say.
Corey Sherlock, Chairman of Minister Aeon Reardon, Brenda Parr, thank you all for being with us.